From 90.5 WESA, this is The Confluence, where the news comes together. I'm Kevin Gavin. 2 months into a new school year, most students are still attending classes in their homes, at least some of the time. But what happens when classrooms reopen full-time?
Because I take care of my dad, I would keep them home.
You know, I think that all the precautions are being taken. They wash their hands more than they ever have. They're wearing masks. I would be perfectly comfortable with my kids returning full-time.
Two fewer bodies in the buildings, I feel like, can only help everybody. So my children will be staying home.
A conversation with parents from three different school districts. Plus, how is the lack of classroom, hallway, and cafeteria socialization affecting English as a second language learners? And another installment of our Good Question Kids series. A special edition of The Confluence starts now. It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The new school year is well underway, and many students are still learning remotely. For some parents, the shift to online learning has added a new role to their daily responsibilities, teacher's aide. So how are parents dealing with the switch to remote learning? Jessica Reed is a Woodland Hills School District parent with children in first and fourth grades. Jessica, welcome.
Hi.
Keisha Hatton is a parent of a Pittsburgh Public School student and a student in the Environmental Charter School. Keisha, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
And Heather Houlihan is a Penn Hill School District parent, president of the Penn Hill School District PTA. She has two kids currently, in one in high school and another in elementary school. Heather, thanks for taking the time.
Hello.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey, nearly 93% of households with school-age children report their children are doing some form of distance learning from home. So what does distance learning look like for your kids? Is it synchronous, asynchronous, Zoom classes, paper packets? Jessica, let's start with you.
Mm-hmm. My children are using Google Classroom, and there is live instruction at least three times a day, often four or five times a day. Mm-hmm. Depending on the day and depending on the child.
Mm-hmm. Heather, you have two students in school. How are they learning? Synchronous, asynchronous?
We have chosen hybrid. So our kids go to school 2 days a week, and they are at home the other three.
And Keisha, what about you? What form of learning instruction are your kids getting?
Both are getting asynchronous and synchronous schooling, and they're both doing, one is doing MS Teams and one is, they're online and their teachers are on camera with them.
Many schools went remote for the first time back in March or April since things went virtual. How has virtual learning changed for you and your kids? Things gotten easier, more complicated? Heather, let's start with you this time.
That's kind of a difficult question to answer for me personally, because I had a senior last year. So it was chaos. You know, her whole world was turned upside down. The eighth grader at that time was, at the beginning, he was kind of living his best life. I mean, this was everything that he could have ever hoped that it would be, until he realized that they weren't going back to school. My youngest child was in second grade at that time. And it was just a disaster for us from the beginning. She missed being in school, and she wanted no parts of doing any of this. At this point, it's just become a fact of life. No one's happy here.
Keisha, have things gotten easier, more complicated, whether it's for your children or you yourself?
I would say in the beginning, when it all first started, it was just a bunch of busy work, and it wasn't organized. I would say now it's a little bit more organized, and it's actually work being done that's worth doing and actually worth, you know, taking the time to do, as opposed to in the beginning, it was just everybody was basically doing the same thing. But now for both of them, it is a little bit easier, but they both rather be in person.
So Jessica, easier, more difficult for you, for the kids?
Woodland Hills chose to use what Pennsylvania rolled out and made accessible to all the school districts. I think it was maybe the PA Cyber platform for online learning. Our kids did that, and it was very much busy work. My third grader at the time had to suddenly learn how to read to learn, and there was no instruction at all. She was just, you know, reading all of this stuff and then trying to regurgitate it. And my kindergartner at the time, there was no phonics or anything. It was just a canned product. So we got through it. It wasn't enjoyable, but it was very brief. It was just a small part of our day every day. School is happening in our house. Mm-hmm. They are each in their bedrooms every day, logging on at 9 a.m., interacting with their teachers and their classmates.
Some parents and families have raised concerns about issues of lack of teacher-student interaction that they would get face-to-face. Children's ability to self-monitor or even stay engaged. Have any of these been issues for you, Keisha?
As far as with my son, sometimes he definitely needs that one-on-one. But they have the hours when the teachers are online. If he's during class time, if he don't understand and there's not enough time to get his question out or get to his question, they have times when the teachers are online, they can log on and meet with the teacher one-on-one or send the teacher an email to schedule a time. And they break down into smaller groups to do different stuff. But also, for my son, they gave him a tutor that he gets Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 5.
Mm-hmm. So what are your school districts doing, if anything, to provide support to you and other parents? Heather?
As far as the district is concerned, I'm not really entirely sure that we're doing much, or at least as much as I feel is needed, mm-hmm. in order to be able to reach out. I mean, there's just not, in my opinion, a lot of communication. Now, that could be because we're doing all of the work. Maybe if we stopped doing the work, we'd be called. I'm not sure, but right now I'm not seeing a whole lot coming parents' way if kids aren't saying, I'm struggling and I'm struggling hard.
Jessica, what's been your experience in getting support or not support?
At the beginning of the year, they set up a district-wide tech department, which we had not had before. You know, we had, like, each individual school had a tech coach, and they realized there's probably going to be a lot of tech issues coming up in these first few weeks, so they did that. I never had to use it, but I know that it existed. But as far as the work, I know the teachers have been putting in a lot of extra time, making extra phone calls. I'm on my kids and we're checking their to-do list every day, so they're not missing a lot of things, but I know that the teachers have been making extra calls. I'm interacting with teachers more than I ever have before. They're making themselves available in many different ways.
It's a special edition of the Confluence. We're talking to parents Jessica Reed, Heather Houlihan, and Keisha Hatton. Some parents who are helping their children navigate remote learning are also working from home themselves. Are you working from home? And how have you tried to balance your work with helping your kids do their schoolwork? Keisha?
I work at a school. With my school, we go in once a week. So I'm home with my kids 4 days a week to make sure they stay on track and to be available to help.
Mm-hmm. Jessica?
I do not work outside of the home, so I'm here with the kids all the time, and we're very fortunate for that.
And Heather, what about you?
I work in an office, so I do work outside of the home full time. I have had a very understanding boss, so I have been able to either bring my younger child to work with me and help her navigate her schoolwork while I'm in the office if I need to be there, or to take my work home with me to do here. But neither way is ideal. There is something suffering every single day, whether it's my work or hers. You know, you can't do all things well.
To each of you, do you feel like they are learning right now at the level they should be learning if all things were normal? And Jessica, we'll start with you.
So my son is in first grade, and, you know, his kindergarten year was basically cut short, and he didn't leave being able to read. So we're in that critical stage of he needs to learn how to read right now. And I was honestly really, really worried the first few weeks of school. But I can say with confidence now that, yes, he is learning to read, and that is what I need him to get out of first grade. Do I think he'd be learning more in person? Absolutely. But do I think he's getting the best that he can be getting given the circumstances? Yes, I do. My daughter's in fourth grade, and I think she's thriving in this environment, actually. I've been really impressed with her and her teachers.
Keisha, what about you?
My fifth grader, who is in Pittsburgh Public, she's doing good. She's basically, I believe she's learning what she can learn while what she's given online. She's doing the best of what she's given online. Straight A student in person, straight A student online. So I guess she's doing pretty good. My son, the stuff that they're learning is basically what they do in school. So I can honestly say he's actually learning. But again, he could use that in person.
Heather?
You know, so I've had children recently who have gone through high school and have taken these classes that my ninth grader's now taken. And I can say that it's not the same for him. The honors classes and, you know, the advanced classes, he's in honors algebra too. And that's, you know, that's not an easy concept online. He's watching videos over and over again. So what might only need one class of instruction time is taking 2 or 3 hours at home. I can't really say. I think it's too soon in the school year to classify whether or not he's actually learning. His grades are decent. He plays a sport, so he has to stay eligible, which is a definite motivating factor. And as far as the third grader is concerned, I'm a little concerned. She's doing as well as I think that she can be. Third grade, it's one of those pivotal years where they learn a lot of new information. Frankly, she doesn't want to learn it from me. So it's a little bit of a struggle sometimes because she is in the emotional state where she doesn't want to not be in school. So it's tough. I think she is learning it. I don't think she's doing it willingly.
So final question to all of you. With the pandemic continuing, a resurgent in COVID cases, do you want your kids to return to the classrooms full time? And Heather, we're going to start with you since your kids are hybrid, some in classroom and some time out of the classroom.
I have to say that, you know, I think that all the precautions are being taken. They wash their hands more than they ever have. They're wearing masks. I would be perfectly comfortable with my kids returning full time. I really think that for my individual situation and for my kids, in-person instruction would be most beneficial to them right now. And I don't have a lot of qualms about sending them.
Keisha, you have kids in different schools, Environmental Charter and at Pittsburgh Public Schools. Do you want your kids, do you feel it's safe for them to return to the classrooms when those schools say, come on in?
I feel as though I would keep them home because I take care of my dad and I don't want to risk it at all with none of it. So because I take care of my dad, I would keep them home.
Jessica Woodland Hills, if given the option that they're saying the classrooms are open 5 days a week, do you want to send your kids back into the classrooms?
My children will stay home. They have said that whenever we do return to hybrid or full in person for this year, they will continue to give an online option. And so two fewer bodies in the buildings, I feel like, can only help everybody. My children will be staying home.
Jessica Reed is a Woodland Hills School District parent. Keisha Hatton is a parent of a Pittsburgh Public School student and a student at the Environmental Charter School. And Heather Houlihan is a Penn Hills School District parent. Thanks to all of you. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The pandemic has exacerbated existing educational inequities. Teachers and advocates say students of color, students with disabilities, and students learning English as a second language are the most vulnerable and at risk of falling behind. 90.5 WESA's Sarah Schneider reports on the challenges that immigrant and refugee students are facing.
Sharifa has enjoyed spending more quality time with her family during the last several months. She's 18 and attends a Pittsburgh high school, though since March she has been learning from home. We're only using her first name to protect her privacy.
I have more time to spend with my family. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I learn some different food to cook that makes me happy at home.
She's learned to make her family's favorite foods, including mandazi, an African donut. She's found ways to connect with friends. She attends a virtual after-school program for homework help hosted by Arise, an immigrant and refugee youth support nonprofit. The Arise staff say their students are hard workers and dedicated to their education, but now they're in an impossible situation. Sharifa, one of the district's 1,064 English language learners, is expected to participate in classes taught in English and complete her assignments in the same way that native English speakers are, all while trying to figure out the new platforms teachers are using. She uses Google Translate for reading assignments.
There is other students, they can understand, but not all of us, like, we can understand, like, what do they mean? Like, not all of teachers can, like, they are using to help us, but some of them, they are trying to help us if we need help.
Recently, the students in the after-school program were frustrated because they said their teachers wouldn't accept homework because they had too much outside help. The English in their turned-in assignments, according to the teachers, was beyond their level. The students felt demoralized. They say they are using their resources to improve, but they're being punished. Jenna Barron, executive director of Arise, told the students that it was unfair.
So I agree with you that it's wrong, because you're doing the best you can, you're spending a lot of time on it, you're learning from it, and you're still learning English, and you have still a lot to learn, and your teachers have tools for understanding that through other ways.
Outside of the classroom, Pittsburgh Public Schools has received a significant jump in requests for interpretation and translation services. Jonathan Covell leads the English as a second language department. He says they're doing their best, but when information is sent home to families, there's a delay of several days until translated information is sent home. There are 96 languages spoken within the district.
And even when we do translate materials and can walk families through, significant barriers can still exist with the technology, especially if you're not used to technology. If this is your first experience, and for some of our families it is, it can be a difficult space to navigate.
Those working in after-school programs say they spend a lot of their time helping students and families navigate the technology they now have to use for school. Emily Blair is the education coordinator with the Pittsburgh-based Latino Community Center.
Our education team spent the first few weeks of the school year just solely focusing on helping families get online. But there were days where, you know, we would spend 2 hours with just one parent walking them through step by step. And that is still an ongoing process. So that has been tough.
When the school year began, Pittsburgh Public Schools was still short on devices for students. Now the district says, as far as they know, every student that needed one has a computer. The district has also issued hotspots and passcodes for Comcast Internet. Blair and other advocates say their students desperately want to return to in-person learning. Pittsburgh Public is scheduled to begin a hybrid model of education on November 9th. Students will spend some time at home and some time in buildings. Once that happens, educators say the next challenge will be figuring out how to make up for the learning students have lost because of the additional barriers. I'm Sarah Schneider, 90.5 WESA News.
It's a confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Mary Lee Williams. The move to online and hybrid schools means students aren't gathering around the lunchroom, meeting in the hallway, or running around playgrounds. While these interactions are important for social-emotional learning, generally, for English as a second language learners, it could remove a critical aspect of language learning, socialization. Emily Blair is the Director of Education at the Latino Community Center. Thank you for being with us today.
Sure, thank you for having me.
So just to start with, Emily, you work with families, you know, you work at the Latino Community Center, you see them over a long period of time, I assume. From your perspective, how are English as a second language learners doing right now?
You know, that's a great question. And I would have to say it does vary widely depending on the student. But overall, this has been a major struggle. You know, when you take virtual learning, which has been a struggle for all families, just that transition to online, learning to navigate the platforms has been hard. And then you layer on the fact that our English learners, this is obviously their second language. So looking at the different platforms that school districts are using, and we work most closely with Pittsburgh Public, everything that you see is in English. And, you know, for a native English speaker, they can go and ask a parent for help. But that option isn't there for our English learners because their parents don't speak English. So we've been receiving a lot of phone calls. And LCC is part of the Pittsburgh Learning Collaborative's family hotline. We've received about 120 phone calls just within the past few months, and many of them have been on how to navigate the online software, just largely because of that reason. The language access has been a major barrier for them.
So, you know, you're obviously, you're the education director. You have experience working with these students, working with these families. From your perspective, what role does socialization specifically, you know, the interactions that people have, what role does socialization play in adapting to a new country?
Yeah, I think it's critical. You know, we see families that can come to Pittsburgh and feel isolated. And I think that's the opposite side of socialization, is isolation. And that can be huge. And during COVID, that feeling of isolation is huge because that contributes to feelings of depression. And it can really have an impact on both adults and students. The need for socialization, on the, you know, the flip side of that, it contributes to students improving in their English. It helps them develop relationships. When students have friendships and positive relationships in their lives, their outcomes are better long term. And that is just so important for us.
So when it comes to like English language learners or English as a second language classrooms, do teachers consider socialization? What kind of role does it play actually in the education process?
Sure. So my background is English as a second language, and I don't know that we necessarily use the term socialization, but interaction and relationships are kind of the foundation of ESL, because students coming in, especially students who are new to the country in English as a second language, we know that they need those connections. And the foundation of building English is speaking and interacting with others. So that socialization is a key part of English as a second language. And that's what makes it so hard in virtual learning, is you can have interactions and you can, you know, build those relationships to a certain point, but the face-to-face isn't there. And that is really critical when building language, because especially, you know, English is a tough language to learn. And it transitions a little better from Spanish, but if you're teaching it from another language that doesn't have the same roots, it's even harder. So when you tell a student in the classroom, you might tell them to turn and talk to a friend, or we put them in small groups a lot and give them a sentence to build from. Those things are much more difficult in virtual learning. But when it comes to ESL, yes, socialization and just those interactions and relationship building are a key foundation.
Is there a way for families to try and recreate this experience for their students? Is there any advice you can offer for families that might be like a little concerned about this?
I mean, interaction is the same in any language, and that is a foundation also of early literacy. But we don't emphasize that has to be in English. Literacy transfers. If you have foundational literacy in Spanish, that will transfer to foundational literacy in English. And it's the same with interaction. So if you are interacting with your parents in Spanish and having, you know, a quality conversation, then that will transfer over to English. So if that is ongoing in the home, then that's, I think that's great. And I could see that would hopefully reduce feelings of isolation if you have that kind of environment going on in your home.
Emily Blair is the Director of Education at the Latino Community Center. Thanks for talking to me today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. been asking families for questions, those very good questions that a kiddo in your life might have but leave you scratching your head. We're turning to a couple of experts today for some help. Jevin Heath is a lecturer at the University of Pittsburgh's Department of Linguistics. This question comes from 7-year-old Ketsia Schechter. She wants to know, why do words have the meanings they have and who decided?
Words have the meanings that they have because people use them that way, really. Words' meanings are arbitrary. So, you know, most words just mean what people want them to mean. If you think about how the word for chair is so different in so many languages, right? In English, it's chair. In Serbian, it's stolica. In Spanish, it's silla. Those words are completely unrelated. It's really just about the people who use the words, what they mean when they say them. People, when they talk to each other, they understand each other. And if they don't understand each other, then they basically have to talk to each other or figure it out. And the meaning of the words ends up being whatever they agree on, however they understand each other.
Since words are decided by a community, if you will, Ketsia has a follow-up. She wanted to know, if the countries in Europe are so close together, why are there so many different languages?
I would say it's the opposite. Europe is really big, but there are not that many languages that people in Europe speak. There are maybe 290, 300 languages in Europe, and Europe is a whole continent. The reason that there are so many languages is because different groups of people don't talk to each other. And so there's no reason for their languages to be the same.
And can geographic barriers, borders, sort of cause this not talking to one another and therefore developing different languages?
Yes, absolutely. In New Guinea, right, on the island of New Guinea, there are over 1,000 languages that are spoken. That is largely because it is such a dense region with so many mountains and valleys and forest. There are really small communities of people that don't talk to each other very often. They don't generally cross the mountains except maybe to, you know, to trade every once in a while. And so there are just many, many different languages there.
Thanks to our good questioner, 7-year-old Ketsia Schechter, and we thank linguist Jevin Heath from the University of Pittsburgh. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, too.
Our next good question comes from Elias. He wants to know why the hills in Pittsburgh are so steep. Well, for that answer, we're going to turn to Albert Kohler. From the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, he's an expert about rocks and strata and prehistoric geology for our region. So, Albert, what's the answer?
Quick definition, a geological definition of a hill is a natural elevation of the land surface. But when we look at Pittsburgh's landscape, and for instance, if we were to, say, stand on Troy Hill on the north side, we would look out and we would see that the entire landscape in all directions is fairly flat lying. And that's because Pittsburgh is on a plateau. And so this plateau is made up of bedrock that was formed 300 million years ago. So this is our bedrock. But yet, what we are seeing, what we think we see, is these hills. And yet, the hills are really just a dissection of the bedrock, of the plateau during the last ice age. So essentially, we are just looking at valleys here in Pittsburgh. It's only that when you measure it from the Allegheny River or the Ohio River at the point up to Mount Washington that you have a change in elevation of roughly 300 feet or so.
Albert Kohler is an expert on rocks and strata with the Carnegie Museum of Natural History. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
If your kiddo has a good question that has you stumped, send it to confluence@wesa.fm. And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.